The podcast you're about to listen to is adult in nature. The content is graphic, and we're probably going to be talking about fucking at some point. So please make sure you have your earbuds in or that you're all alone. And all alone seems pretty easy to do these days. That's it. Let's go.
But I won't complain and I won't quit. I am enormous. Get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me. Can't you see? I'm the kind of woman I'm supposed to be.
Hi there, and welcome to the Body Storytelling Podcast. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie Delatour, and this week we have a story of pleasure and prison from author and podcaster Joe Loya. Hey there, how's your apocalypse going? I know it's a really, really hard time. I've had plenty of time recently where I sobbed my eyes out, or I figured I was probably going to die sometime soon. I think there's a pretty good chance I'm going to get this thing. And since respiratory issues are the things that always take me down, I'm pretty fucking scared about that. But after sitting around and crying about it every once in a while, I decided to do something. And this past week, I took my first screenwriting course. Why screenwriting? Because it's kind of a whole new way to look at storytelling. It's got a lot of overlap, but it's new. And I took a four-hour workshop this past weekend, and it felt good. It felt good to take 21 pages worth of handwritten notes, and that's a lot of notes. It felt good to take pictures of the screen so that I could remember how to chart these things. It felt good to learn something new. I'm doing it again this coming weekend. I'm taking the next level screenwriting course this weekend because I felt alive. I felt like there was a promise there, that there was some hope. I don't know if it's going to help you, but tackling something new, even though it's incredibly overwhelming right now when you're dealing with what you're dealing with, learning something new shook me out of the funk, and I highly recommend it. I also want to tell you a story that might give you a little bit of hope. If you are someone who has followed me on Patreon, even if you're not, at the free level this week, I put up a story that was happening at the time. In the middle of the story, I wasn't sure how it was all going to turn out. So I'm like, right now, the story's good. I need to capture it and put it online, because when you're in the middle of a story, you don't know where it's going to go. But if you want, you can look at the images and you can read about this story at patreon.com/body. But I'm going to update you on the story. Here's how the story started. My partner talks to his mom quite a lot. And his mom has pancreatic cancer. It's pretty advanced. And when we went to Phoenix 3 weeks ago or so, it was to see her because cancer. It was right at the start of the world kind of going crazy, before shelter in place, before they'd announced quarantines. But we were really close. And getting on an airplane right then was terrifying, because I was afraid I was going to take this person who was immunocompromised because she's dealing with chemo and cancer. I was afraid I was going to get on a plane and bring it to her. So far, so good. No sign of that. But when Bent was talking to his mom on the phone, she mentioned that in Phoenix, where she lives, she wasn't seeing them taking social distancing very seriously. In fact, the last time she'd gone in for a chemo appointment, she hadn't really seen any masks. She hadn't seen a lot of gloves. He asked her if she had any, and she said, no, they're really hard to get here. Don't have any masks, don't have any gloves. And she was pretty upbeat about it, like, oh, well, not much I can do. That's kind of how she is. He got off the phone. I came out to get a glass of sweet tea. I was taking a break from work. And he's puttering around in our pandemic kit, going through the nitrile gloves, going through the hand sanitizer, going through the alcohol, going through the face masks that people have been sending me. Patreon supporters have been sending me face masks, friends. I have face masks right now from Portland, San Francisco, Pennsylvania. So I have a few masks for Bent and I. And he asked if he could take a couple of them and stick them in a package. He was going to try and go FedEx them to get them to her, along with a bunch of supplies like gloves and everything else. I peeked my head in while he was going through the kit and asked him what he was doing, and he immediately burst into tears. And this entire time, he's been pretty stoic about this. He's been, let's just do what we have to do. But my partner, that's how he is. When he loses his shit, it's serious. And he started sobbing. I put down my glass of sweet tea. I threw my arms around him and I said, honey, what's going on? And he said, I'm so scared for my mom. She doesn't have gloves. She doesn't have masks. She didn't see them in chemo the last time she went in there. They're just not taking it as seriously as we are in San Francisco. And there's a risk. There's a huge risk she could get this thing. He said, there's no way that I can get this package to her in time. Even if I ship it right now, it won't be there before her 10 a.m. chemo appointment tomorrow morning. And I said, okay, let me see what I can do. I only know one person in Phoenix, and that's erotic artist Nadia Vanilla. So I called Nadia and I said, we have an emergency. Do you have any gloves? Do you have masks? And she said, well, I have gloves. And I'm happy to take them over to Bent's mom. I gave her the address. She said she'd be taking them over later on today. So we had gloves wrapped up. But apparently nobody has masks in Phoenix, or at least they didn't this past weekend. I started putting out on social media, I need masks urgently in Phoenix. Two would be ideal, since Bent's mom's partner would be driving her to chemo. Ideally, they both have masks, but above all, we need at least one. Without any connections in Phoenix, it took a little while. People started asking me questions. Can I get it to her on Thursday? Nope. She's got chemo first thing in the morning. We have to get them to her today. A bunch of people were like, I could do it, but I can do it later. I could do it, but I'm far away. I can do it later on this week. Nobody could do it right now. Slowly, answers started coming in. One of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence put me in touch with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence of the Grand Canyon, who have been making cloth masks. However, the masks were in Joshua Tree, and I had no way to get them from Joshua Tree to Scottsdale. People started asking me questions about the where and the why. I'm fielding lots of private messages on Facebook, and then I get a message from a Santa that I know. A professional Santa and storyteller named Santa True. We've known each other because we're in the storytelling community, but I've never met him in person. He contacts me and he says, so where is she? I said, apparently Scottsdale is very close to Phoenix. Her actual address is Scottsdale. He said, what does she need? I said, we have gloves. We need masks, ideally two masks. And he said, okay, I have Santa community in Phoenix. I'm going to reach out to them. If I don't hear from them, I'm going to reach out to the Society for Creative Anachronism, the SCA, and I'm going to see if they can help. So if you don't know what the SCA are, they're the people who dress up in like Renaissance fair outfits. They dress like medieval times. Amazing costumes. The Santa community, Santa costumes. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence dressing up like nuns in whiteface costumes. All of these are the costume communities who are working at this. Later on, I found out the hasher community was involved. Hash harriers are, I'll put a link into it. You can look it up, but it's people who like to drink and run and drink and run. It's getting drunk and running. My brother in Charlotte has been involved in the hash community for years and years. So these are people who like to dress up. These are people who like to help others. Eventually, we found out that a Santa near Phoenix, an hour away, had masks and was going to be dropping them off to Pam, Ben's mom, the night before her chemo, 7:30 in the evening. And I'm waiting to see if this happens. It turns out there was a woman named Sarah who was already on the way. She was headed there, and I said, "We're good." And she says, "Wait." I'm like, "Wait, Santa Claus is coming?" She's like, and I'm like, "Keep going. More masks is better. We don't know if we have one or two. This way we'll have two, one for the husband, one for Ben's mom." Eventually, I get a message to say that Santa Claus just showed up at our house with face masks. And it turns out that Santa and Pam and Art, her husband, they all kind of were in remote community with each other. They'd never met. And I started getting messages about how cool Santa was, how cool Ben's parents were. They had this new connection because of this emergency. And they made new friends. And the next morning, Pam sent me a picture sitting in her chair in chemo with a face mask on and gloves on. There was no way for us to help from so far away. But the world is full of good people. People who will go above and beyond, like Santa Bo and Santa True and everybody else who worked so hard to make sure she sat in a hospital with a mask on in a place that was really dangerous for a person going through chemo. We're going to find out soon where things are in her cancer. They're going to be doing tests after this because this was week 6 of 12 of this bout of chemo. She's had different kinds of cancers in her life, but this one's pancreatic cancer. And I think you know how serious pancreatic cancer is. In the middle of the plague, in the middle of cancer, a little bit of hope. How amazing is that? Because strangers worked their ass off to make a miracle happen. A miracle's whatever you say it is. A miracle is how you look at it. And you can go, "Oh, yeah, it's just a mask or it's just some gloves." But at a time when no one has any, when no one has any bleach, when nobody has any hand sanitizer, finding somebody who will drive an hour to deliver something or drive 45 minutes across town from Phoenix to Scottsdale in traffic. Well, not traffic, to drive across Phoenix to Scottsdale. That's a big fucking deal. Somebody who actually has what's needed and is willing to do the work for a stranger they've never met, that's a fucking miracle. And I'm hanging on to that because I need that bit of hope right now. This morning, my partner and I got up at 5 a.m. and it was time to go to the grocery store. Because of my respiratory issues, I'm not allowed to go to the grocery store. He goes every time. He got up, he went and ran to the grocery store, got everything on the list. I stood by the back door as he brought the bags in. I had rubber gloves on. I wiped things down with alcohol wipes, started putting them away. My job is to take everything and organize it and try and fit it into the fridge. And, you know, if things get bad and people start breaking into houses, pretty much all they're going to find in our house is a 165-pound slobbering dog and a fuck ton of cheese. But, you know, if it's the end of the world, that's how I want to go. Hugging on my dog, eating some cheese. Are you missing human connection right now? Online porn is getting old. It's always hard to meet sexual partners in real life. And right now, it has never been harder. But yeah, quarantining's a thing. So maybe you want to connect with a real live person in a whole new way? Check out MyGirlFund.com. MyGirlFund allows you to form virtual relationships with sexy, amazing women. You can meet, message, share photos and videos, and even cam with those women in private. MyGirlFund's not new. It was launched way back in 2009, and over the years, they built an awesome community of sexy women to connect with who are friendly, relatable, and most important, who want to hang out with you. The difference is that My Girl Fund allows its female members to control their exposure. They connect with who they want to connect with, control how they want to interact, and decide what to charge for these interactions. There's no set prices for interactions and content. It's all negotiated one-on-one. When you do a job, you want to get paid. We can all agree that people need to be paid for their labor. The reality is that it's very difficult for women to get paid for virtual adult work without risking personal exposure. And while many women are willing to dirty chat or to share nude content for money, safe and discreet platforms are rare. Their focus on anonymity and privacy means that My Girl Fund can allow for complex, intimate relationships to develop. My Girl Fund is a discreet, safe, and private adult community, and you can join for free. And for a limited time, you can become a lifetime premium member for less than $5 when you visit mygirlfund.com/Dixie. Oh, and here's something new. To support people who are trying to make ends meet from home during quarantine, they're giving a $50 bonus to all women who sign up during April and reach $500 in contributions. Remember, as a fan of the Body Storytelling Podcast, you can get discounted credits and bonus interaction features for life when you go to mygirlfund.com and use the promo code DIXIE. Are you ready for your story? Well, let's talk about our storyteller. Joe Loya is an essayist, playwright, TV show writer, actor, and author of the memoir, The Man Who Outgrew His Prison Cell. He also produced and is co-host of the podcast, Bank Robbery Diaries. He's currently writing his next memoir on how living on maximum security prison tiers prepared him to be the father of a teenage daughter. This storyteller is Joe Loya.
Hey! Wow. Thank you. Damn, what a lovely crowd. Damn. Thank you. Wow, that's a great intro. I almost wept back there. Thank you for having me. All right, so when I was 9 years old, my mother died. She was 26 years old. I tell you that only to say that she was super affectionate with me. I had a lot of love. My dad and her were very young, and they were very happy to have me, and so there was a lot of affection in the home. So when she died, there was this big vacuum, and I needed female affection, and I needed maternal affection. One of the things she used to do was when I would sit and watch movies with her, or TV, she would scratch the back of my head gently. And I didn't realize how much I needed and wanted that until one day I was sitting in front of my aunt. She reached down and she started scratching. And I'm like, oh, I need stuff that I'm not getting because this feels good. And I tell you that to say, I needed affection and I went looking for affection. And some woman who, when I was 12 and she was 22, close to the family, saw that I needed affection, and she took advantage of that, and we started having sex. And this story is not about that, but I tell you the sex part only to say that she knew she was fucking a boy, and all she wanted was the dick, so when she would lie on her back, and then I would enter her, she'd put a pillow over her face. So I was having sex, and my body was like, woohoo, this is fucking amazing. This is great. This feels fantastic. But as soon as she would come and tremble, her legs would drop like a corpse, and I would just pull out, and I would walk away, and I was done. So the sex I understood was you fuck until you're done, and you don't have to look at anybody's face. You don't have to connect with them as people. And that worked for me, you know, for the next 6 years with her and then into all my other relationships. And then I was 24, and I had kind of pushed myself in the criminal world, started doing a bunch of petty crimes, and I went to prison for 2 years. And when I got out of prison in 1988, I started working for a friend of mine who I'd known since high school named Brian, and he was a head chef of a restaurant in Pasadena called the Crocodile Cafe. And him being my buddy since high school, he said, hey, man, you need a job, you know, reentry and everything. Like, that's kind of tough. And I said, hell yeah, I need a job. So he gave me a job. We had started in Marie Callender's right after high school, so I knew my way around the kitchen. So when I start this job, I was a real shit. Because when I started working there, I also started robbing banks. I went on a 14-month, 30-bank robbery crime spree. And I was a real shit in many ways. I was really violent. I was not violent with my girlfriend, but I cheated on her all the time, and I was emotionally abusive. Real, real terrible guy. Like, worst period of my life. I went to prison. That was really bad. But it was really bad here. It was escalating. And when I started my first day there, I met a woman named Barbara. She started as a waitress. And it's one of those things, when you start working with somebody on the same day, you guys are like, hey, it's new, let's help each other out. And we would check in all week. Hey, how you doing? I'm doing all right. How you doing? Whatever. And since I knew Brian, he was a chef and he was in charge of the kitchen, sometimes when her order would get confused, I would go and I'd act as liaison between Brian and the runner and make sure her order got right. I was always looking out for her. She was looking out for me same way. Like if I was thirsty, I needed something to drink, I would yell out something. And the drinks were on the other side of the counter, so the waiters and waitresses had to bring us drinks. She was always looking out for me. We were always making sure our orders were right. It was cool. We were friends. And that's how we were. We were friends for a very long time. But one day, and I don't remember exactly how we end up at my place, about a year in, so we were friends for a while. We ended up at my place, and one thing leads to another. Again, it's a long time ago, so I don't really remember all the details, except I do remember we were finally in bed. And now we're in bed, and we're fucking. Now, like I said, up until that point, the fucking that I knew was, wham, bam, thank you, man. You know, you get you done, you get the fuck out of there, and you don't hang around. There's no emotional connection. Except this time, I'm fucking her. I'm on top of her, just regular missionary. I'm not a... I was an adventurous kind of guy, but I'm starting to like feel something. I don't understand what I'm feeling. It feels weird. I know one thing, I can't come. I'm just like going at it, and I'm like, whoa, this is amazing. And I'm looking at her periodically, opening my eyes. I'm like, whoa, what the fuck? Closing them again. Open them, what the fuck? And then she's on top of me. And then she's up top of me, and the weird thing is there's no pillow. So I get to look, and I'm looking, and I'm looking, and we're grinding. Sometimes she would just follow me, and we'd be kissing and rubbing each other. And the rubbing our chest felt as good as my dick inside of her. It was, like, amazing. It was, like, all this wow stuff going on. And my head's thinking, what the fuck is going on? This is crazy. I'm feeling shit. And then, you know, I'm behind her. I'm on the side of her. Like, I'm fucking, and I can't come, and I don't know what's going on. I feel something's wrong with me because I'm enjoying the fuck out of it, but I've never gone this long. Finally, we finish, and we're laying next to each other, and we're doing this thing that I'd never done before. Even with my girlfriend, like, I have my hand on her, she has a hand on me, we're all sweaty, panting, going crazy. My first thought was like, oh man, I wonder if she's hungry. I wonder if I can make her some food. And then I'm like, oh fuck, what the fuck, where'd that come from? Like, it wasn't even, you know, I probably owe her some chow. You know, I put in work, she sweated, I need to go take her to a restaurant. It was like, what can I make her? And so I say, hey, man, you hungry? She goes, yeah. I say, hey, man, let's jump in the shower. And we're in the shower together. Now I'm showering with her, scrubbing her back. I'm like, whoa, this is way too much connection for what the fuck is going on with me. And I have this thought the whole time, like, this is weird. But I keep going with it. And then we get out, and I make her dinner, and then we go outside, and we do this weird, I mean, it keeps getting weirder and weirder. We go to my porch, and we don't sit at the table. We sit on the porch steps like we're a John Mellencamp, like, music video. We're fucking eating on the fucking porch steps. Fucking weird. I'm a bank robber. I don't give a fuck about nothing. I'm like making people walk me to the vault, stealing $32,000, walking out, not giving a fuck. And oh man, we're here like on plates, on the porch steps. It's fucking weird. So once we're done there, we take the plates inside and I say, hey, you want to walk around the block? We go walk around the block holding fucking hands. I'm telling you, man, it was goofy. It was John Mellencamp, man. It was straight up fucking sentimental bullshit. But the truth is, I mean, I'm joking about it, but it was fucking righteous. I never fucking felt. It was totally accidental. It was totally accidental that I stumbled into intimacy because I'd never known that shit before. And I want to treat her nice, and I want to take her for a walk and feed her. Fantastic. So you would think, okay, that's the woman you're supposed to be. It's not that kind of party. It was a one-time thing. Me and Barbara, I think maybe, I vaguely remember we might have been again one time, but it wasn't that kind of thing. It was just like it happened. Like, oh, wow, it happened. And a couple months later, I get arrested, and I go to prison for 7 years. While I'm in prison, you know, you got in prison, you just got to jack off. I had a big porn collection, but also I used my mind a lot because I had this thing with Barbara, which was, she was beautiful. Let me describe her real quick. She actually resembled my girlfriend, who was really beautiful too. Again, I was a real shit, I need to tell you. just to remind you. But it was like, she was like Megan Fox's younger sister, but they were real, she was really attractive, really thin, and she did this thing where she stood like she had like been in ballet, you know, with the feet out and real beautiful posture, really strong, walked real strong. But yeah, so that was her long black hair, brown hair, dark hair. Anyway, point is, I'm in prison, I'm thinking about me and Barbara. And I would, before I would do that, of course, I'd take a picture of my mother off the wall, put it on the desk, face down, and they'd get busy to choking the bishop. So that's what would happen. Barbara. Now, here's the interesting thing. I start changing my life in prison. I go to solitary confinement. And while I'm in solitary confinement, I start changing my life. It's on the podcast. It's on the memoir. And one of the things I start thinking, okay, I got to get out. I got to be different. And I kept coming back to that sex and saying, okay, I probably had sex 1,000 times, and one time I had that feeling. I said, when I get out next, I want to flip the script. I want to have sex like that 999 times in one shitty experience. That's what I want. I want to chase that. So while I'm in there, I was a criminal for the first half of it, doing a bunch of crimes in prison and all that kind of stuff. And I had a homeboy who was in a Mexican mafioso who took me under his wing and started kind of schooling me on stuff. One of the things he said is, Joe, do not use heroin. Heroin will fuck you up. It's one of the greatest regrets I have. He said, once you try heroin, you know what heaven feels like, and you will be chasing that for the rest of your life. Don't do it. It's hard to say no to. Heaven is hard to say no to. And I want to tell him, Dagwood, years later, when I was thinking about Dagwood, too late, man. I had Barbara, man. Barbara was my heroine. Because when I got out of prison, it's true, when I got out of prison 24 years ago, I had changed my life. And I did want to have that experience. And I've been pretty successful when I came out of mostly, you know, nobody's perfect, but mostly I ended up having barber sex where I was present. I was in the moment. I was enjoying it. And yeah, thank you very much. That's it.
The die is cast inside my mind. The die, a blood red setting sun.
That song was Love Crime by Susie Sue and Brian Retzel. You know that Patreon is saving my ass right now, right? If you don't know about Patreon.com, it's a subscription service to make sure that the things you love continue to exist at a really difficult time in history. And Body Storytelling hasn't had a live show in about 2 months now, which means my entire income is gone. Thanks to Patreon, I'm able to continue producing the podcast and other things. So we can only do that through Patreon support right now. That's all we've got. Whatever you can give makes a huge difference right now. Go to patreon.com/body, B-A-W-D-Y. We've got all sorts of rewards for you. One of the things that we're offering right now is a behind the scenes on the coaching process where I work with somebody and I tease out all the details, ask detailed questions, and it'll make you think of your own stories. I've been getting feedback on this coaching series from people who said, oh my God, they're remembering all these stories they'd totally forgotten. And now they're reconstructing them in a whole different way. Storytelling lets you do that. You've got everything you need right there at home for your own story. So in addition to the behind-the-scenes coaching series, in addition to the ad-free podcast episode each week, we are now adding tickets to the live stream for our sexy sidekick and up Patreon supporters. Go to patreon.com/body. You'll be the first to learn about when upcoming live streams are happening and the first to have an opportunity to get tickets. Thank you so much for your support. Hey, you know how we're not allowed to gather together? You know how we're in quarantine and in shelter in place? And you know how in the podcast, at a certain point, I always tell you about the upcoming live shows for Body Storytelling? Well, I have no idea when I'm going to be able to do that again. But I do have an announcement. Da-da-da-da. Marty put in a da, 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 da. But I do have an announcement. The first Body live stream is going to be on Saturday, April 18th. It's going to be at 7 p.m. on a Saturday night Pacific time. I planned that around virtual orgies. I checked in with the virtual orgies to see what time they started so that we could get their party started with dirty stories. So a Saturday night. Wear your sexy pajamas. Make sure you buy a ticket for the Body Storytelling live stream on Saturday, April 18th, and tell everyone you know about it, because this is the very first time we've done this. And it's got to go well for us to do it again. So tell everyone. There's a link in the show notes to the tickets for the live stream. They're on sale now. And the capacity in the Zoom webinar is limited while we're figuring this stuff out. Tell everyone you know. Go to our website, or you can go to the show notes for this episode. Make sure you buy your ticket as soon as possible. Yeah, the very first body storytelling live stream is going to happen on Saturday night, April 18th, and it starts at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Oh, it's over. But you know what? We have something to look forward to. Next week, we have another podcast episode, and soon we have a live stream show that you can be part of. Till then, let's say thank you to the people who've made all this possible. Thank you to podcast producer and live stream moderator-to-be, Marty Garcia. Thank you to sound engineer David Grossoff. Thank you to video archivist Joe Moore. Thank you to you for listening, for telling your friends about the podcast and the soon-to-be body storytelling live stream. Thank you for writing us a review. If you're broke ass and you don't have any money, think about the things you could do that would help boost our signal and keep us going. It's a crucial time. And anything you can do to support body, however that is so greatly appreciated. I'm sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour. This has been episode 118 of the Body Storytelling Podcast. And here's a peek at what's next.
I'm not a kinky person. Like, I am vanilla. And I'm not just any vanilla. I'm like vanilla bean, like flecked through the flan, like really good vanilla. Multiple orgasms, like driven, like the sex is good. You know, why do you need anything else? It's like, I am like Madagascar vanilla. That's enough.